A new era is unraveling before us, and conversation, data, and action are our only hope. Join me, Edward Cohen, a trilingual real estate entrepreneur, and data guru Jamie Fratkin, to learn together about the future of cities and how entrepreneurs are approaching our present-day challenges. The goal of this podcast is to unite real estate lovers, technology adopters, environment enthusiasts, and creators that are working towards achieving greater and fairer collaboration for all. Come sit with us and discover how investing in real estate, sustainability, entrepreneurship, and education initiatives improve our built environment, the public discourse, and climate change. Listen to industry experts, thought leaders, and rising talent using technology to improve our spaces. We'll examine diverse issues through interviews and conversations where going off on a tangent is encouraged, hoping to help you become a better entrepreneur, a more nuanced thinker, and find comfort in data. Today on Tangent, we have the opportunity to listen to and learn from Robert Morgenstern. Robert is the founder and managing partner of Canvas Property Group in New York City, where he oversees all investment and management decisions, as well as directing the firm's business development. Rob recently launched Finished Canvas, a platform for short-term furnished rental apartments. Hi, Robert. Thanks for joining us. Where does this podcast find you?
I am in my office. I signed a lease at the end of February, so I'm a multifamily investor, not an office investor. So I top ticked the market, signing a long-term lease in late February. Furniture's just getting installed, but starting to come into the office a couple days a week, and really happy to be here. And a lot of the people that work here are in as well. So we're happy to have found a space that's our own floor, a lot of working windows and a big outdoor terrace. So we got a little bit lucky on what we signed, but we're in our own space and people are starting to come back with regularity. So I'm in Midtown South.
Definitely exciting new space for work. And it sounds like you're slowly but surely embracing a hybrid model of remote work for now. Hopefully we'll touch on that topic later.
Yeah, by all means. There was nothing slowly or surely about embracing remote work. It was like a tsunami. So we adjusted to full remote work, and now it is an interesting question about the hybrid model and where you come in. But yeah, happy to get into that as well.
Great. So over the past 10 years, you have owned and managed over 1,500 residential units across 50 properties in the city of New York, amounting to $750 million in real estate value. Walk us through your journey. What were the keys to the evolution of your firm and transforming your initial multifamily operations to become a vertically integrated asset, property, and construction management company, which is CPG today?
That's a long story, but it goes back about 17, 18 years, and as most good stories, it started with a girl. My girlfriend at the time had gotten her real estate license. I was on the IT consulting space, early web development, but we went to get our real estate license together. Her family owns and operates a high-end residential brokerage called Clio Residential, so had a license and bought my first apartment in 2000. Made more money on that than I did in my 3 years of employment. So I figured there was something to that. My mother-in-law is one of the top residential brokers in New York. Signed on as a broker for a two-family house on 87th and New York Avenue and didn't really care for walking up and down the flights of stairs. Started to help her with that. And a few investors came in looking for kind of rudimentary cash flow ideas and walking shells in Harlem. And we, I realized there was something to it. My brokerage career lasted 7 years. And I always liked the end user and the kind of buyer's experience, but wanted to get much more in control of the bricks and the situation. So bought my first building with a PE fund in 2011 and grew from there. That was a three-building, 85-unit portfolio in the West Village. And quickly bought another portfolio and was up to around 350 apartments across these buildings and sold everything off in 2015 and have slowly built back up again. Over the last several years, as the political landscape has changed and the pricing got a little bit aggressive, instead of changing geographies or changing deal type, we decided to lean into the operations. I've always, from early on, been interested in the technology and the operations and the end user experience. So started getting much more in depth into reporting, the operations, and the, certainly the technology that goes into not only the tenant's experience, but also as an owner-operator. We started to do third-party property management. First client there was actually my first private equity partner. So continued relationships on the investment side have always been important to us. But then we launched a third-party property management business and our short-term furniture rental platform. And that's sort of the license. So now we're doing a lot of interesting things with PropTech as it relates to the tenant experience, rent collection, package delivery, and everything that goes into that, which we can certainly get into. But there's, you know, from IoT to the technology that goes into the operations, which is sort of where we're focused on as a property manager for our own portfolio and third parties. We think there's a very big hole on the technology of actual operations. So we're trying to build that proprietary software that we built out to create reporting that goes a little bit deeper than maybe a traditional thing.
Yeah, and I'm sure our listeners will love learning more about that. We're going to jump into that in a second. But before we get ahead of ourselves, first, good to know that you fell in love with real estate since the beginning. You're a romantic, sounds like it. But let's discuss something that we both share optimism about these days, which is the comeback of New York City, or was it ever gone? How will New York City, aka the mecca of real estate for most, beat another obituary? Even though we're seeing it already in the shape of a outdoor dining, in the shape of more resilient approaches from the city perspective. But what does the road to recovery look like in your perspective?
So the term of New York City's obituary is often used, and it's certainly appropriate here. I have now lived through this being my third kind of blow to New York, with September 11th being my first and Great Recession last. This is different, right? COVID is one aspect of it, but it's certainly not alone. Whether it's the looting that went on with our retail, issues that are more socioeconomic in nature, there's a lot more than just a virus that you need to overcome. The retail market was certainly strained. There's a significant budget gap that needs to be closed when you look at COVID and how it's affected the life of a New Yorker and how that affects property values and ownership. But I do believe that this will come and go as far as a life experience, a New York experience for either lifetime New Yorkers or young New Yorkers. When you look at either the increased testing that the NBA and Yale put together that's been approved, you could see a scenario where that becomes almost daily. You walk into an office building and have to prove that in the last 24 hours you have a negative test. You could see the asymptomatic positive test kind of going quietly by the wayside, and then you stop having a spread. But I think all this will turn on a vaccine. And if we can have significant boost to the testing in New York, I think you can find a place where indoor dining is allowed again, and offices are much more open. And it all is just a comfort level that the people in your inner circle or in your office or in your restaurant are also testing negative, and that comes with availability of tests that have quick responses. And I think we're certainly way closer now than we were then. But then it gets back to what is the New York experience, and we need safe communities. We need everything that was in New York, restaurants, nightlife. But at the end of the day, I think people will wind up back in their offices. I think people will have a hybrid model, but be in a situation where going out at night in New York and living your New York life, whether it's, you know, like me, where I graduated, came here in 1996 and never leave, or you come in for 2 or 3 years before going to the suburbs, the experience of New York is not like any other, certainly in the Northeast. And while there's a spread to certain other markets in the country, the talent here drives the tech companies, it drives the biggest corporations to hire here. And therefore, we just need to get the experience of living in New York like it was 6-9 months ago. But there's a lot of work before we get back.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely important to realize that currently the benefits of density on why we all love New York are are sort of in a hiatus. And it's also important to differentiate the short-term urgencies we're facing versus the long-term chronic issues that we want to overcome as a city, as communities. But I'm really not sure if the investors and part of the real estate industry and the city and state policymakers today understand or value the difference between the fact that there are times for having a growth strategy versus having a resilient strategy. But surely with the entrepreneurs and positive real estate players such as yourself and Canvas Property Group, we'll survive and thrive. Now, let's move on to multifamily operations and how demand have changed in a post-COVID world. So besides CPG, you also own Morgan Stern Capital, an affiliate real estate investment firm focusing in Manhattan and prime submarkets in Brooklyn and Queens. So I imagine you have a well-rounded picture of the landscape here with your 17-year plus track record. Tell us how COVID has affected different neighborhoods across the city and, how will we get to a better place sooner rather than later?
We do have a pretty diverse look. We own, operate, and manage in Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Queens in different areas within. And I think what we saw in mid to late March was myself and other owner operators and managers extending leases while both tenants and owners tried to figure out what we were doing. Generally, the lease expirations in New York have been predominantly from May to August, which has catered to a school cycle that started and then renewals that pushed. So the demand peaks June, July, and August. Virus hit in March, a lot of leases extended. And then you started seeing everybody kind of leave for the summer. Some went to their parents, some left forever. Some who are students went back internationally. And we just heard that Columbia probably won't be coming back live for this season, this semester. So, the shift wasn't so much initially exactly where is the demand. It was where are your collections? What happened to our tenants? Are they paying? Are they leaving? So we had to get immediately into a place where we would produce a financial report that showed a rent roll with some balances, and we were worried about it once a month, to a place where we were worried about every day what was paid, what was collected, how did it compare for the first several days of the month prior, T12, and a year ago at the same time. Once we got into a place of this summer, it's much more a question of vacancy and filling units when they do become available. We had generally been operating buildings in the 96% to 97% occupancy. The way we've always done that is we know if a tenant is going to stay with us, and we hope that they do. But if they don't, about 45 days in advance, we have leasing partners who are on the market for the 45 days prior to the lease expiration. The lease is signed, and we have a new tenant moving in 1 to 2 days after that. Once COVID hit, I didn't feel comfortable. The outgoing tenant didn't feel comfortable, or the incoming tenant and broker didn't feel comfortable. So we held off on showing apartments until there was a vacancy, which immediately will give you about a month of vacancy. So 3% drops to 8%. And then when you start looking at which units are filling and which are not, over the last 10 years, there's been not only a densification of urban environments, but a densification of buildings. You look at co-living, but prior to co-living, people in my space, and certainly myself included, were making units more efficient by potentially taking eating kitchens, moving them to the living room, adding a bedroom and bathroom. So creating a hyper-efficient three-bedroom where a one-bed, one-bath may have existed before it. And while the rent per person might only be $2,000, you've created an opportunity to live in New York City in a brand-new apartment. The price per foot on that could be upwards of $100 to $115 a square foot on a walkout. Units are struggling throughout Lower Manhattan where they existed, West Chelsea Village, hyper micro apartments or shares that are overly dense are struggling more than any. Additionally, we're finding neighborhoods that are more walkable, less intense, less dense in Brooklyn, Park Slopes are doing very well from people that are working from home. But the transition over the next few months, I suspect, will be people that are working from home in a hybrid model or exclusively from home will want to be in Astoria, in a Park Slope, a very residential neighborhood that offers them outdoor dining, parks, waterfront, there's going to be a whole different subset of New Yorkers that are coming back that maybe are, say, sick and tired of living at home, but the basement of their parents' apartment isn't exactly what they had in mind for their early 20s. They're coming back and may not be all that keen on getting into a tight L train or a dense subway situation and are going to want to walk. So working from home is going to be one subset. Walking work is going to be another. The opportunities to do both will probably have a drive, upwards drive on rents over the coming months and years. And you look to Chelsea on larger apartments that has both a nice place to work, but also a tremendous amount of office space. Walking up the High Line, Hudson Yards, you look at opportunities in Midtown. While they are dense, if you can get apartments that are, you know, separate spaces to live and work, those will be probably much more demand than, say, you know, deep in Bushwick or, you know, potentially out in certain areas of Queens, or the people that do need to get back to an office, which we suspect will be in the late 2020 into the first quarter.
Yeah, no, very interesting. And, you know, even though we know real estate is a cyclical business, especially multifamily in New York City, according to a Douglas Elliman and Miller Samuel report, rents in Manhattan fell by 10% in July compared to 2019, which was also the first time they have fallen in over a decade. So in a way, we were overdue for a correction, and now it came in the shape of an external shock. But there's right now, I think, over 13,000 apartments listed for rent, which is the most amount of inventory since 2006, prior to the financial crisis. So, hopefully this will be one step back, two step forwards for New York City and its residents.
On Tangent, instead of sponsored ads, we have Stimulus, where we dedicate a minute of airtime to amplify an entrepreneur building a business that's making a difference.
As we have all been reevaluating our work-life balance, some of us have been forced into a new career search, and others are trying to integrate their passions. Our lives have been disrupted. We're rethinking our purpose at the workplace and questioning the paths not taken yet due to fears and roadblocks that are holding us back. In these introspective times, a coach that partners with you to unlock your personal and professional potential is invaluable. You may be itching for a change and staring at a blank screen, wondering how to make purposeful decisions and authentically align with your mission to impact the world around you. On today's Stimulus, we have Ariel Sadan, the founder and coach at Revel and Awe, a coaching company that supports early and mid-level professionals in identifying and pivoting into their ideal career direction, overcoming imposter syndrome, building confidence, and living into their leadership potential in every area of their lives. To learn more and get a free 30-minute consultation, that's right, free, please visit revelandawe.com/tangent. That's revelandawe.com/tangent.
If you are an entrepreneur or small business owner who would like to be featured in our Stimulus section, email us at tangentcommunity@gmail.com. And now back with our friend of Tangent.
Let's move on to the digital leap that we're seeing the pandemic incentivizing and in many cases forcing multifamily owners and operators to adapt, right? I remember last year meeting landlords and property managers to discuss how we could help them improve tenant retention, tenant attraction. And let me tell you, in some cases, it would have been easier to sell a prosciutto to a rabbi. But I know you've been at it since 2015, studying what the best technologies are and what are not necessarily nice to haves, but like necessary and to really improve your partners' portfolios and your residents' experiences. So walk us how you see the industry adapting and taking that digital leap.
Yeah, if you think about your experience with a landlord, there's a number of New York multifamily operators that type their leases on a typewriter and fax them out, and it's worked for them. And it's worked for them for generations, not just decades. And there's no reason to change what works if you're happy. But there's no doubt that we've taken some shots to the system. So even those that have been slow to adapt have had to conform in some ways. We are seeing some older landlords or that are going into their office maybe more than what might be necessary because they haven't adapted. I've always, like I mentioned before, I've always enjoyed that aspect of it. And I think it makes a lot of sense to adapt some of these technologies, and some have become a requirement, whether it be on the leasing side, using Matterport technology to do virtual tours when we wanted low touch or the brokers really weren't involved. But that comes and goes, right? As the owner operator and head of management company, I'm looking at different prop tech every day. There's something new that comes out, and knowing what I want to spend the money on to put into our buildings is a big part of our job. I'm sort of, you know, director of a movie or offensive coordinator of a football team, whatever your analogy of choice is, you have to understand how it's going to affect the whole and deal with what your experience is, both as a managing agent for a building or the owner operator. So when we start looking at the tenant's experience, critical, A, that they don't have more than one app in their phone. If you start throwing four or five apps at a tenant, they're going to say thanks, but no. But we do need to deal with of apps, sure. You can't get away with, we don't believe in having USPS and Amazon drop their boxes in the middle of the lobby. That doesn't work. We don't believe in printing out notifications to tenants, taping them to the windows or sliding them into their doors. We don't believe that, you know, you need to write a check and put it in the mail and then it shows up at a PO box and you have to take it to the bank. You need the ability to treat these tenants like they're customers, and the customer has a lot of different options, and that experience goes a long way to how they feel about the living experience. It isn't just affordable. While we renovate most of the apartments we own to a very high standard, we think, you know, all of it kind of comes in play, and the relationship with the tenants is critical. So the prop tech that comes to the tenant is just one part of this, right? It deals with utilities, it deals with security, cameras, everything that goes into the management side is sort of our own perspective on reporting and financials and utilities and the technology behind data analysis on who's living in these buildings. What kind of amenities does a building want? If a building is occupied by kind of males in their late 30s as opposed to more predominantly younger women, you know, whether it be their employment or their commute distance, it may drive what kind of technology you want to put into your building.
You're jumping ahead of the next point, which is great. I was going to let you because you were on a roll, but I just wanted to first give a little intro on and a bit more color. So with Canvas Property Group, you not only own and operate your own buildings, but you are partnered with multifamily owners to provide tech-enabled and data-driven property management, as you've been telling us, which is why you launched Canvas Lens, a division of CPG dedicated to finding valuable operational and financial information for clients. So tell us how you are using building analytics and tenants' preferences to produce actionable data and, more importantly, data-driven decisions to improve efficiency and tenant retention across your portfolio.
I would say all of the decisions that I've made for Canvas are things that I wanted as well. And as you buy more buildings and interact with more equity partners and investors, I was having trouble keeping track of certain aspects of these properties, so I wanted to build some technology around it. When we started to go to third parties to take on more management, the key to profitable management is being able to do more with less and getting out of the way of individual emails and manual spreadsheets where you're trying to track everything that goes on in the building. You can get into some of those pieces, but we felt it was very necessary to find a collaborative cloud-based software that had both, you know, a front end that looked good and was able to give us some visibility inside sort of the NOI of the building to track what was becoming real issues, right? Whether it be with our lender and reporting that we had, or with investors to understand really what was the performance of these. Because to date, I haven't seen too many other people doing this. You get a financial statement the 15th of the following month, which will give you all the base financials, but it doesn't really tell you what's happening operationally, and I needed to know. So we started building using some existing technology that had a platform. It took about a year to kind of coalesce around a number of these internal dashboards that get into individual operations, looking at operating expenses on different areas, whether it be per unit, per square foot, for payroll, G&A, R&M. And not only are you looking for a budget variance, you're also looking at comparable buildings in the portfolio. Because if you're expecting a building to perform at $1,000 a unit for repairs and maintenance on your budget, and then you do, all that tells you is that your budget matches your actual. It doesn't tell you if you're under or overperforming the building next door, which can highlight really where you need to go deep dive into looking at your repairs, which may be something on your heating and cooling, or it could be something in your service contract. But understanding how a building is performing at a glance, year to date, trailing 12, across a portfolio, are all things that we were getting asked for, and the individual report creation doesn't work when you have the number of clients that we do and the number of buildings that we own and operate. So we need to build something that allowed for that. So when we looked at compliance, OPEX, general asset management, and health of the building, having the ability to see whether it be when RPIEs, DHCRs, or any city agencies were filed, proof that they were filed, so we can send a report proactively to the building owner, is equally as important as seeing on a monthly basis, what is the DSCR and debt yield of these buildings, and have them proactively shoot me a notification to say, here's an alarm and an alert. This building is underperforming. Let me call the building owner or portfolio manager to make a decision whether it be cash is running low or debt yield is what you expected it to be. And all of this is sort of descriptive analytics, right? It's just showing you what already exists in a way that you can actually digest it, which was critically important when operations start to slip. Like when everybody's at a 1.5 debt service or better, and debt yields are 8 or higher, no problem. Right? It's when you're straight into a portfolio that it matters who's operating your buildings for you, and whether or not they can tell you something that you need to know before you tell it to them. Because the old property management was just a lot about, here's your operations, tell me what to do. Our best quality is that we are building owners, and we can tell you what we think is happening and where you need to focus your time. And that's been extremely well received by building owners.
Now, last but not least, this has been a great conversation. Robert learned a lot. I'm sure listeners have as well. But we want to get you out of your comfort zone, Robert, and appeal to your discomfort zone, if you will. And we want to challenge you to share a professional or personal anecdote about an opinion, perspective that you had in the past that you have changed your mind about.
Yeah, I think we've been through a decade's worth of revolution. When you look at the online shopping has increased 1% a year over the last decade and 10% in the last 4 months. You see all of these pushes online, and then you look at how they affect our organization. Certainly, my perspective when I signed my lease in February, which feels like a generation ago, but it was only half a year, was I needed space for every person with 4 feet between them and everybody living here at least 5 days a week. And this is where everything's going on. The 3 months that started in mid-March changed the way we thought about not only the people in the office, but the people on site. Our supers touring buildings and how they report that information into us. We had to create a completely cloud-based collaborative software that allowed me to see what was going on, because I wasn't going to see the people. And as long as they were touring buildings and I could see this visual evidence in the way of a building inspection report online, I could then start to rely on that technology and then realize that I don't need to see all of these guys in my office to know they're doing the job. And there are tools that we could build to give me the support that they are doing their job while they can have comfort that they're performing the tasks they need without having to be here. And I didn't feel comfortable with them moving around the buildings. There's much more flexibility of working in New York City now, but we have permanently shifted our opinions on exactly how the job is done. So fundamentally, our employees in different aspects, both accounting, interaction with the bookkeeping team and the property managers, invoices aren't shared on paper, at a weekly meeting anymore. It's all cloud-based and collaborative. And all of that spreads to the entire organization and it's allowed a huge uptick in efficiency. And what, like you said, you drop down the necessary commute time and increase the efficiency of what I can see visually, and the transparency of our organization has shifted entirely from the place where we have meeting after meeting after meeting in a conference room. Now I have two guys working in my conference room, socially distanced, and don't know when I'm actually going to use that conference room again.
In terms of housing and just how we're seeing that up to 40%, according to estimates, up to 40% of residents could face eviction and potential homelessness. And, you know, tier one cities such as New York City and San Francisco are, you know, where there's a lot of supply of market rate apartments, yet, you know, residents are increasingly priced out. So what's, you know, this is going to be a question without a clear answer. So I'm setting the bar low. However, where does it start? Is it the high construction cost? Is it the permits and the bureaucracy you have to go through? Is it the salary of a construction workers, or is it a combination of the whole system that has gotten too complicated and the priorities of developers? Also, you know, they have to pay back their loans, so they have to price rents at some at a certain level that when they hit the market, they might not be absorbed as previously. So what's going on and how can we fix it?
Yeah, there was a supply issue and has been for years. I certainly don't think it's the cost of the contractor. I don't think it's the greed of the developer. I think you can go back many generations and you'll find developers trying to maximize their profit. I don't think that's where we are. I think capitalism has worn out. You have a tremendous supply right now. And if you think rents were too high, the market has created the drop in demand. And for as simple as that is, everybody has been complaining that rents are too damn high. That makes sense. People have been overspending their rent burden. Right now, there's a bigger shift in rents up or down than any in the last 20 years and beyond. And that has happened, obviously, a pandemic and more. But that has created the push on pricing because the demand is there. And the shift to be a buyer's market, a tenant's market, has boosted concessions. And people need to keep their buildings full. And that hasn't been the case. There's been so many tenants and so few units over the course of years. The overbuilding, mostly in the condo market, isn't really as big of an issue. But when you see supply in the available unit boost like this, it takes care of the price. And the pricing has come down dramatically. You can get the same apartment completely renovated for the same price, or you can get a larger apartment in a different neighborhood. You can choose right now in a way that, you know, regulation isn't going to help. Changing the rent laws doesn't change the free market status. And there is no better driver of pricing than allowing the free market to set the price, because it has. We reset pricing and we'll reset the value of buildings and we'll move forward from here. But there's going to be a dramatic reset both on the retail pricing, residential rents, and certainly to some extent, some of the new development condo pricing. I think the for sale market at a certain price point is doing, you know, perfectly well. And I suspect it will continue to do well. But I think some of the new developments are struggling and continue to struggle, and some of the developers will lose those buildings, and those may reset as multifamily. And maybe that's okay, because they were underwriting 3,000 to 3,500 foot for B-level product, and that never should have been built. So I think there's some of this stuff that's healthy, but with a traditional or more normalcy to the demand market, I think we'll reset a place price-wise that will settle a bunch of this. The affordability of, you know, apartments and affordable is different than where should free market apartments set. So, you know, I think there's an issue with rent regulation. I don't think it's a perfect system. I think it's broken in many ways. I think it's a topic for another podcast. But at the end of the day, there's, you know, certainly an issue that may or may not get settled in prior according to the Supreme Court. But there's an issue with what has gone on over the last 12 months on the rent laws, but when you layer that on top of retail and on top of free marketizing, and then you look at potentially what can happen with taxes, there's the entire industry is sort of turned on its head and just struggling.
No, definitely. I mean, and in particular, New York City with the overhaul of rent laws last year, combined with an explosive cocktail of a pandemic, you know, I think it certainly put New York City real estate to the test. But I think the ones who stay and the ones who look for new ways of you know, either adopting prop tech, and you know, hopefully this will trigger a prop tech arms race, if you will, to overcome the challenges that we face and align incentives among all stakeholders. I think they will be rewarded, the ones who stay in the city. So last but not least, Robert, where can our listeners find you and Canvas Property Group? Website, social media?
Yeah, canvasgg.com, certainly on LinkedIn, Canvas Property Group, Mortgage Capital, but canvasgg.com will be the place on the management side. Deals at Mortgage Turn Capital on the acquisition side, and you can certainly find me at my name and social media aspects. But,
great. I'll make sure to add that information under the podcast episode description. Mr. Robert Morgenstern, thank you once again for being here with us today. Very interesting insights and to learn from your experience.
Thank you so much.
That is it for today. This has been your Tangent host, Edward Cohen. If you like what you heard, please share this podcast with a friend. Thanks for listening, and remember, stay curious and always be learning.